There is a secret that most pro athletes, elite CEOs, and high performers all know. They all have a group of world-class coaches working for them to help them optimize their potential. At Super Athlete Radio, our goal is to provide you with the caliber of world-class coaches and guests to help you unlock your potential, dominate your industry, and dominate your life. Let's get better today.
And Ted, welcome to Super Athlete Radio. How are you?
Yeah, doing well, Chase. Thanks for having me on. Excited to dive into this conversation with you today.
Really excited to have you on. And then if you could share it, you're in Mexico currently. And you just got some stem cells.
Yeah, I've been in Mexico for 3 months. I typically come here every year at the end of the year in Playa del Carmen when it gets a bit cooler. And I go diving here. I have a group of friends, some entrepreneurs that I'm friends with that I like to see. Great jiu-jitsu school here as well, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. But this time I also came and got stem cells. I didn't get it in Playa. I had to fly to Puerto Vallarta to get them done. There's places here, but the clinic that I wanted to go to, Josh, I met Josh. He's the owner of Dream Body Clinic. So I headed over there for a week, and that was an experience. Unfortunately, I can't say too much because I just got it a few days ago, and I'm not feeling great. I feel like I've been stuck by needles in all my joints, right? But very hopeful about what the results might be. And so that's the story.
Yeah, that's awesome. In my experience, it's usually what, about 3 to 4 weeks before you potentially you're going to see the benefits of those?
They say 3 to 6 months where you really start feeling the difference. However, some people feel it faster. Some people feel it in 10 days. Of course, there's going to be a placebo effect there. People, you can give someone a sugar pill and they feel like, oh, that was miraculous, right? That's why so many studies are done with placebos to compare it to like, well, this person believes they're doing something good for themselves. So that belief is so powerful. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm hopeful, but I'm also skeptical as well. And the plenty of research there showing that stem cells are a part of the future. It's just a more experimental at this stage.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. Have you read the book, The Expectation Effect?
I have not. No.
I just read it again recently. The placebo effect is absolutely extraordinary and it is awesome. And I try to apply it to like everything in my life. That's like the experiment of like, this sip of this drink is going to give me all more energy than I've ever had.
I love it.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Well, I'm really excited to learn more about what you're doing now, how you're helping your clients. And it just seems like you do an amazing job of living life on your own terms while using being of service and helping people. Before we get there, I'd love to hear a little bit about how you grew up and how you got into this space.
Yeah, my story of getting into health and fitness is kind of, well, I think different from some people's. I was black sheep of my family. I was always active and I never really played team sports. I scored on my own team when I got put into a soccer program. I wasn't good at sports naturally. Then I got into martial arts. Then that's when I started like, oh, I'm finally good at something, right? And the reason I think I got good at martial arts where I wasn't really good at other things. I mean, I had some speed. I could run fast. I wasn't weak, but I wasn't so strong. I had some good attributes, but wasn't super athletic. But I trained at a guy's house in my neighborhood. And we lived in the Redlands. What's that? Redlands is south of Miami. So I grew up in Miami. We moved down to the Redlands, which is about an hour south. We were living in Coconut Grove, which the hot place in Miami right now is Miami Beach. But in those days, it was Coconut Grove. That's where Miami Vice was.
That's where all the festivities were going down. The center, the focal point.
Exactly. So yeah, the The way I got into health and fitness was actually through tragedy. I mean, all through high school, I was smoking weed. I was, you know, a party animal, skateboarding, getting drunk, doing all types of drugs, although I did exercise too. I lifted weights. But I don't know if it really is, it's up to you whether you want to go deeper into the story, but my brother was kidnapped and murdered, my younger brother, who was only 9. And that chaos in my life and in my family's life, that's what led me eventually. I dropped out of school, had nothing going for me, and somehow found myself in Miami Beach working an odd job in receiverships, hating it. And I had no prospects, no future promise, no skills, no education. But I became a personal trainer. I met some people in the gym that I was working out in to blow off steam from the job that I hated at the time, right? My boss was terrible in receiverships. He was just very stressed out and stressful person to work with. And I met some people who were in the gym and they were making $75 an hour helping. They were wearing, the guy was wearing a tank top. The woman was wearing exercise clothes and they seemed to be enjoying what they did and they looked healthy and they were in the gym. They were helping people. And I was like, and you're making $75 an hour doing that? Like, where do I sign up? And so I ended up getting a job in the first place that I signed, that I interviewed at after getting my personal training certification. That was the Eden Rock Resort and Spa in Miami Beach. Again, the hot place at the time. Now it's the Fountain Blue in that area. But I got hired there. They weren't going to let me work on, I got hired as a personal trainer. And then they were like, well, listen, we're not going to let you actually train anybody for 2 years because... personal training certifications are a joke. But I just started training people on the floor. I was like, all right, whatever. I was really happy to have an opportunity. And so I just grabbed people on the floor. I was bored out of my mind, walking around the gym, putting away weights and had, you know, not that much to do. So I would get people, I would show them exercises and people started asking to work with me. They're like, I can't work with this guy. And then my boss came up to me one day and said, listen, people are asking to work with you. This is probably maybe a month or two after I had the job. And people are asking to work with you. So instead, we're going to waive that 2-year thing, that 2-year clause, and just let you work with clients right now. And that's kind of how things started. And then I ended up meeting a bunch of people through that experience and being in that gym. Ended up working with Robert Downey Jr., Ricky Martin, trained Richard Branson once. So it was cool. Met a bunch of celebrities. And, what's that?
Did Richard Branson go hard?
No, he was dealing with some injuries and I was helping him with some of those things. So it was more like that. I you know, as we talked about before we started recording, I have a bunch of injuries from skateboarding and doing all the wild stuff that I did in my teens, as well as some car accidents and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So I made a name for myself also as being someone who understood how to help people with injuries after they went through surgery or went through physical therapy.
And then how old were you when your brother passed away?
I was 19.
Okay. And then looking back on that now, in terms of how do you feel like that impacted your life personally?
Oh, I mean, it destroyed my life, Chase. It took everything that I had going for me. It took everything that my family had going for them. My father, my mother, my sister. It completely turned our lives upside down. We all, I mean, I dropped out of school. I couldn't concentrate. Couldn't read a book after I'd been through something so intense. And again, I don't know how much it serves your audience to talk about it, but it was a big case in Miami. everyone knows about it who is there at the time. Everyone will know my brother's name, Jimmy Rice. The story was so bad that it became a true FBI story, right? So because initially he went missing, and then it was after a few months where they found the killer. Killer was executed. I mean, it's like one of those movies like Silence of the Lambs, you know, it's terrible. Not quite that bad, but it was a terrible story, and it left me in a place where I didn't know what to do with myself. My whole life was just, you don't know what to believe about the world or what you should do with yourself. And my parents were struggling. You know, I lost a brother. They lost a son. We know losing a son or losing a child or losing your spouse is one of the most stressful things that you can ever go through. There's even studies that show that. So bad. And they were recovering on their own. They couldn't be there for me. And so we were all kind of just trying to figure our way through it. So the good news is that it eventually led me into a career where I was able to help other people. And the reason I got into it was because through not knowing what to do, but feeling terrible. I mean, I had PTSD, I was depressed, anxiety, couldn't sleep, had nightmares, couldn't focus, my memory was bad. And it was when I started focusing on my body through exercise specifically that I started noticing that I started feeling better. And even though the external stories didn't change, my brother was still dead, but I started feeling better. And that sparked something in my mind at being, you know, I was probably around 20, 21 at that time. I was like, there's something to this, because even though my circumstances aren't changing, my mood is changing, right? Because at the time, now we're all talking about trauma and its effect on our nervous system and how to deal with it. And probably so too many people are thinking that they're traumatized when that's, you know, using that term a little bit too loosely because daddy didn't buy them the car they wanted when they were 16. I don't know. But in those days, nobody really talked about it. And it wasn't understood that it was mostly, soldiers experienced PTSD after they came back from combat because of the intensity of battle and war. But I had one psychologist who said, yeah, you have PTSD. And it's like, okay, what do we do? Just talk about it. And then now what we know is, what I ended up figuring out much later is, yes, the PTSD or depression, anxiety, these things that we consider maybe psychologically based, or at least we used to consider them psychologically based, there's a physiological component to it. Things happen to you physiologically through, not just through your behavior, but through the neuroendocrine system. Your hormones get out of whack, your cortisol spikes, your nervous system becomes sensitized so that it's easier to get triggered, right? So I started understanding, there's a big physiological component to healing or to improving your mood that people aren't really talking about. And that's one of the best things I've been able to do with my clients is, even though, you know, most probably 99% of the people, they don't have a story like mine, but we all struggle with stress. We all struggle with tough moments psychologically, with anxiety, with uncertainty, with maybe even depressive feelings or, subclinical depression, subclinical anxiety, because of the craziness of our world right now. And I believe that starting with your physical health is the best way to not only improve your mood, but also make you more resilient And it's not just my opinion. There's a lot of research backing that up as well.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry for your loss. That's seems unbearable. Yeah, there's a few places I want to go there. I would love to start. I'm glad that you mentioned that word resilient. What is your definition of resiliency? And then how do you feel like that can be developed?
Sure. Resilience is your ability to, let's say, bounce back to your norm after going through something tough, whether that's going through something tough physically, like I did Brazilian jiu-jitsu competitions. That was tough. Other people do like things like Tough Mudder or Spartan runs. You know, how fast do you bounce back from those things? How fast do you bounce back from bad news? From if you're running a business, like I mostly deal with executives and entrepreneurs. How do you handle the dumpster fires that spontaneously erupt in your business? Because we know that if you are less resilient, your decision-making is going to be compromised. We know the effects that stress or excessive stress has on your brain. You don't think as well. So that's kind of how I think about resilience. Like, how fast can you bounce back from things? And as far as developing it, I've talked a lot about how I believe that the physical part is foundational, and I do believe that. I also believe that mindset is crucial too. And part of that mindset, though, is understanding like, hey, this isn't going to necessarily get better unless I make it better. Because one thing I think people say, it's like, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. It's like, that's not how it works at all, I don't think. I think that's something that people say, but they don't either never experienced anything too challenging or they're not thinking critically about it. It's like, well, it can make you stronger, but it's just not like, oh, you know, your brother gets murdered and now I'm this stronger person as a result. I was a fragile person for a long time, emotionally fragile, almost physically fragile. I had to build those things up. So understanding, yes, the physical stuff is foundational, and having the right mindset to build resilience through not just physical exercise, but also other physical challenges. I've jumped out of planes. One of the things I do here in Playa del Carmen, I've done scuba diving with bull sharks, right? I constantly find ways to push myself outside my comfort zone. Those are the types of things that makes you more resilient. So it's having the mindset and it's having the right strategies and doing the work. That's how you do it. And I would say that's a bit of a vague answer, and that's on purpose, because I'll give you an example. I was really kind of scared of doing jiu-jitsu competitions, and then I got really good at them. I won, you know, I wasn't a world champion, but I won a Florida State champion, and I won a bunch of other tournaments. And I was training with professional MMA fighters, and to the point where it's like, if someone could say, well, yeah, man, you're just, you know, you're a total badass. Like, there's nothing that could mess with you. Like, you're, you know, into all this fighting and all that type of thing. And the truth was, Chase, that not really. I mean, I was good. That became my comfort zone. Going and training, rolling with the guys. Okay, you beat me. So what? I'll come back tomorrow. But what I was really scared at the time was public speaking. And I had severe anxiety for a long time. I mean, you know, really started getting intense after my brother's murder. And to get up, I was anxious just being around people, let alone like getting up in front of people and delivering some talk. Right. And Man, so I think that's a really good example, because there's people, we look at people in our world, let's say the business world, people are super successful financially. They're just crushing it, making money. A lot of my clients are like this. And we look at them and say, well, you have it made. But in reality, they're just in their comfort zone. They're doing what they're good at. They spent years refining the skills, getting the knowledge, implementing trial and error, and boom, they're in the zone. They know how to do it. But they're struggling in other areas. Could be with their health, could be with their relationships. And so whoever you are, to build more resilience, you can't stay in your comfort zone. So starting a business and crushing it, to become more resilient, you don't just make more money in your business. You don't just grow it, especially if you're sure that you can do it. You got to do something that's emotionally challenging for you. That could be starting a different business in a different sector or whatever, or it could be, yeah, could be a lot of things. So we have to have the right mindset, and we have to have the right strategies. And those strategies need to be personalized to us.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think that's a vague answer at all. I think that's a great answer. And then the term, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. If the person that I think originated with that was the philosopher Nietzsche. And that dude was, if you knew him, he was like a very extreme individual. So for the general public and everybody to completely to think that's exactly how it works, then I don't know if that's correct. And then I'm also a huge believer. We talk about this all the time in terms of how our physiology drives our psychology. And,
right.
I mean, after reading The Expectation Effect again, and then we had Ashley Merriman on the podcast, who she's a two-time New York Times bestselling author who wrote Top Dog and Nurture Shock. And then I brought that up to her, and she countered me. And really, I think our psychology drives our physiology just as much, but just they're so connected. They're so intertwined. Could you talk a little bit about maybe what you talk with your clients in terms of how exercise makes them feel better, and then maybe how they can potentially use that peak physical state to improve their lives?
Yeah. So here's what, most people sign up with me because they have weight to lose. They see themselves in the mirror. They have success in their career, their business. Their families are usually doing pretty well. But they see themselves in the mirror and they feel like maybe their best days are behind them, or they don't know how they let themselves get to that point. They've, to provide for their families, they've put business first to create a great life. And I'm sure there's some enjoyment there as well of the climb, the creation of a business. For me, I had to learn, I've learned business the hard way. I'm more of a coach than an entrepreneur, right? But for the people who really felt, a lot of our clients, executives and entrepreneurs, they really felt that, that drive to create a business or excel in their career. And then they want to lose fat. So one of the biggest issues facing, in particular, Americans, Canadians as well, Australians, people from the UK, but so a lot of people come to me. So understanding the link between our psychology and physiology, and I would make the argument that it depends on the person, but generally speaking, the physiology is going to trump the psychology. And just take sleep deprivation. It turns, if we, you can have your affirmations and do your cognitive behavioral therapy, but if you're sleeping 3 hours a night, let me know how that works for you, right? For 1 week, you're going to be feeling like life isn't worth living. So anyway, initially though, what we do is we do an assessment. We assess our client's body fat percentage because we know there's a big, besides the psychological components of seeing themselves in the mirror and not liking what they see, which, that's a whole nother can of worms, But we know that the more fat you have in your abdomen in particular, right, visceral fat, you're going to have that's linked with subclinical and clinical depression, subclinical and clinical anxiety. It's linked with cognitive issues. It's linked with smaller brain size. It's linked with, so many things that so many people, it's linked with inflammation levels. And just by having someone change their body fat percentage, we know we can change their psychology, how they feel. Because you might be mentally tough and you feel like crap and you just push through it. And that's what a lot of people do. That's great. But when you realize you don't have to push through feeling bad, you don't have to rely on the coffee in the morning and finding things to get you to relax at night. You can just drink coffee to enjoy it and have wine to enjoy it instead of feeling like you got to take the edge off all the time. So we do a DEXA scan to assess body fat and we help our clients lose fat. Crucial. And again, the psychological component of seeing your body change, we find also is very powerful. Another thing that we do is we measure our clients' muscle mass. Having more muscle, we know, makes you metabolically healthier. And metabolic dysfunction, in other words, pre-diabetes and diabetes, is on the rise. 70% of Americans have either pre-diabetes or diabetes, and a lot of them don't even know it. So we know that having muscle through resistance training, doing some type of resistance training, that's key. We know that affects mood as well. We also have our clients test their VO2 max because we also know that VO2 max, which is the gold standard of measuring cardiovascular fitness. In fact, one of the things that came out, I'll just say it like this, you know, I don't want to talk about COVID, but I'll say this about it, is one of the things that came out of that whole experience that we all went through, that terrible time we all went through, was that people who had higher VO2 maxes, in other words, people who were more cardiovascularly fit. So we're not talking, oh yeah, well, I can bench press 2 times my body weight or, you know, squat 2.5 times on my body. We're not talking about how strong you are. We're talking about your cardiovascular fitness. People who are more cardiovascularly fit had less severe COVID symptoms. This is from the Mayo Clinic. Several studies link that. So this is something that can protect you from getting sick, not just from COVID, but from other illnesses as well. It lowers your all-cause mortality. In other words, some people die early, right? Why? Well, fitness is a big part of it, and specifically cardiovascular fitness. So we do a VO2 max test to assess our clients' VO2 max and their cardiovascular fitness. And we develop a program to raise it, especially if it's low.
And then how do you have them test their VO2 max? What technique do you guys use?
You can do it, the 12-minute Cooper test, which is if you want to just kind of do something, you run as far as you can for 12 minutes and you use an app like Strava to test or to measure rather how far you went in 12 minutes. So you could do it like that. But the best way to do it is to go to a lab and get it tested.
Well, I'm glad you brought up COVID because that's where I wanted to go next. Just kidding.
What are your thoughts on, was it man-made? I'm like, I'm not a virologist. No idea, man. Wrong person to ask. One more thing I want to add, Chase, is the last thing is we have our clients do blood work. And your doctor has you do this, but we find that our doctors, and this is, I'm happy to get into a conversation about medical care or what's really sick care right now. But doctors, again, it's not entirely their fault. The system is a mess. But we find that we have clients with borderline high blood sugar, and they're like, oh, you're healthy. It's like, you're not, it's not black or white, you're healthy or not. Right? And we know that there's better ranges to be in based on research. And then some people, I had a client who had a high ferritin level. He went to an executive health checkup before working with me. His ferritin was not super duper high, because that can be indicative of cancer, but it was really high for someone who's supposed to be healthy. And so that's a marker of inflammation. It's like, well, what's going on? And all it said about it in the health report was, oh, well, he doesn't seem to be iron deficient. It's like, yeah, no kidding. But this is way higher. It should bring up a red flag for someone to deal with. So those are the things that we do. So it's very data driven, very testing driven, and we retest too to make sure everything is working.
Yeah, and just in our experience with blood work and working with medical doctors and things like that, is that I'm sure you could probably have similar experiences, that just the conversation with the doctor, there's a lot of stuff that our clients talk to us about that they just don't want to talk about with the doctor, in terms of, or it just, it doesn't go down the route that they want to go on, because whether it's optimizing their performance, where the doctor just saying, oh, well, it's normal, or like you said, you don't have deficient iron, or just, you know, speaking in a language that works for them. I completely agree. It's just, I think we're just in a great time that we live in now, where there's so many experts that can provide different ways of communicating what's really going on with the body than for generations what was just one particular out antiquated method.
Yeah, well said. Especially more recently, right? I heard someone, I watched a talk where the woman's business was, you know, aggregating medical information so that your doctor could see it. Because in the past, you grew up in a town and you saw the town doctor, and because they were your grandparents' doctor and your parents' doctor, and now they're your doctor and they know your whole family history. And so now it's like, I don't know. I don't know about you, Chase, but I've seen a bunch of different doctors. I've moved around a lot. And so someone who we're going to, who's new, they may not even understand like what is your health history. They might read it really fast, but they're like everybody else trying to run a business. And so it's complicated.
And then what is your kind of standard method in terms of helping people lose weight?
Yeah,
tracking macros or a specific diet, or how do you kind of go about that?
Sure. We focus on calorie balance for sure. We have people track, and I start people out. I have what I call the phase one rapid fat loss program, and that's what we put our clients on. So it's a low calorie, high protein, high fiber, rapid fat loss plan. And our clients typically lose 4 to 6 pounds in the first 10 days. And as you and I both know, like some of that is water, but they're not hungry. And I get a lot of, I don't know about you, but I get a lot of people who did the low carb diets and keto, and where the focus in keto is all on fat. You got to eat the fat. It's the most, so important to eat the fat. It's like, keto diets have some medical importance, let's say. Right. For again, not my field. Never done a keto diet. Probably will never do a keto diet, even as an experiment. But it's okay. But we know that this is really about protein to maintain muscle mass or even build it, and then other things to keep you satiated, fiber, and having enough food volume in your stomach. And so I put my clients on that rapid fat loss as a way to get buy-in. And when they lose the weight and they find, because many of my clients, they've been struggling to lose weight, right? It's like, I can't lose weight. I'm doing everything. And then they do this and it's like, boom, scale drops fast. They're like, okay, you have my attention. I'll listen to you now. Versus if we just had people track and they lost maybe a pound a week, something like that. It's a little hard. Like, is this working because Ted's so great, or is this just, you know, I'm tracking and I'm, you know, So you really want to start off with a bang. Because again, as you know, as I'm sure you know from working with people as well, there's a strong psychological component to fat loss, to getting in shape. And no one talks about it. Everyone's geeking out on the physiology, you know, talking about like, oh yeah, what supplements and what are the complicated physiological mechanisms and the special foods that I need to eat. And the reality is that we don't have a weight loss problem. We have a weight loss. We have a weight regain problem, right? People gain the weight back after diets. That's the big issue. And so the question is, how do people lose weight and keep it off? And if you ask people, when I've asked my clients, it's never a lack of understanding that they shouldn't be drinking too much alcohol or having too many desserts or prioritizing protein and vegetables. It's always, well, I went on vacation, I didn't know what to do, and then I gained weight. Then I came back and I stepped on the scale. I said, screw this. I just put back on some weight, right? So it's helping clients understand the journey, what it really looks like. I've had clients tell me that, oh, I thought you were perfect. I'm like, me? Perfect? I just had an almond croissant for breakfast and a coffee. Yeah, right? So yeah, that's what I would say about that.
And then what are some things you guys do to improve VO2 max?
Yeah, well, we you know, we're very science-based or evidence-based, right? So what the research shows is that doing interval training, except I used to do this, Chase. Because we know that I can think of one study. It compared steady state endurance training with something called a lactate threshold run, which was 25 minutes long. And sorry, the steady state training was like 45 minutes, I believe. The lactate threshold run, which was 25 minutes, then interval training, which was 15 seconds on, 15 seconds off, done 45 times. And then the 4x4 protocol, the Norwegian 4x4 protocol, which is 4 minutes of the interval is 4 minutes long with 3 minutes of rest, repeated 4 times. And so that one had the best results. So I was like, okay, well, it's clear. So I put my clients on the 4x4, and they freaking hated it because it sucks. 4 minutes?
Yeah.
If you're going hard, it's terrible. You feel like you're going to die. In fact, one of my clients told me, he's like, you know, I think I'd rather die early instead of dying 3 times a week doing this program because this is terrible. And so now what I do is I personalize it because we know it's not the 4x4 protocol is not like the thing, right? There's a lot of ways to create intervals, and it's more, we know that, you know, you want to get at least 15 minutes of intervals. We know that, higher work to rest ratios. So you're working more than when you're resting, like 4 minutes on, 3 minutes off, but it could be 2 minutes on, 1 minute off, right? So I adjust the intervals and then try to build my clients up. And then we measure, we retest their VO2 max to make sure it's working.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And then with your clientele, where it seems like cognitive functioning and creativity and energy are all huge components of their financial success. And I mean, really for all of us, these are huge components of all parts, facets of life. How would you, do you believe that physical activity and putting people through things like HIIT training and things like that, there's a benefit for your clients beyond what's happening physically in terms of cognitive capacity and ability to focus and ability to go through discomfort and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's research too that shows creativity gets sparked through exercise. And people like, I think Einstein used to take walks, and there's Steve Jobs used to take walking meetings. And of course they did a bunch of other, or at least Steve did a bunch of other things too. But what my clients report back is that they're more present with their family. Instead of being distracted or stressed, they're more present with their family. They're making more money. The job just feels smoother. They feel more confident showing up in sales situations or meetings. They feel better in their clothes. They, what else? Have more energy. And so there's just a few, right? And I like that you asked that question, Chase, because sometimes I had a call with a client yesterday where she's going through a little bit of a stressful time in her life. And so what we did was she wants to lose fat, but what we did was we took a break. We all know lifting weights is the best exercise, best method of exercise for fat loss, because you maintain muscle or even you build it. And while you're losing body fat, it's the best all around. Multiple studies have shown that everybody who's super lean, that's what they do. But we switched to prioritizing HIIT training. And the reason why was because she was going through a particularly stressful time at work. And not only does the data say that aerobic exercise and things like HIIT training are better for mood and dealing with stress, I asked her, like, hey, what do you feel better doing? And she said, I feel like $1 million when I do HIIT training. And I sleep better too. And I said, okay, well, that's what we're going to prioritize. And yesterday, that was the previous call, but yesterday's call is like, why are we doing the VO2 max training? She's like, for longevity. I'm like, come on, that's like decades away for you. Why are we really doing it? It's like, oh, to feel better. It's like, yeah. And is it working? She said, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's awesome. And then do you put your clients through protocols in terms of strategies and how to deal with stress and sleep and things like that? Or is it the yes?
Yeah, sure. We use wearables. I have an Oura on right now. I'm partial to it. Although I've never used a Whoop. I had an Apple Watch, but I had to charge it every day. It just got annoying. And so I, gave up on it. I use Oura. I have my clients get something. Not all clients, though. I got one client. He sleeps like 8 hours. We had him wear a Whoop because he didn't want to wear the ring. He had no problems with stress. He has no problem. His business is crushing it. He sleeps like 8 hours a night and change. There was just no reason. In fact, I had a call with him yesterday and we agreed not to use it anymore. And because I asked him, I was like, hey, are you finding this valuable? Are you finding wearing the Whoop valuable? He's like, well, to answer questions like what's my resting heart rate? So it's like, okay, it's only good for answering my questions, right? Well, because I ask my clients, what's your weekly HRV? What's your weekly average heart rate? And I was like, okay, we don't need to worry about this then for him.
And then in your experience, whether with yourself or your clients, what are some specific things that have you found are beneficial to based off the data from an Oura Ring or Whoop Sleep to increase your deep sleep and REM sleep and lower your resting heart rate? What are some strategies that you have found in your experience?
Yeah. Well, I'll say this, the Oura is amazing, but in terms of like this deep sleep and the REM sleep, we know it's not super accurate. That's what the studies done on Oura show. So I teach my clients to use it in a way where they're not stressed out about like, oh my gosh, my deep sleep is 13%. It's usually 17%. You know, I don't want my clients freaked out about that. So I say, don't worry about that. Worry about your sleep time, right? Total sleep. In other words, how long were you asleep? Worry about your sleep efficiency. That's really important. And worry about your sleep timing. In other words, are you going to bed more or less at the same time? And then we can see, for me, I measure my resting heart rate and HRV because I see trends, right? I see trends. When I'm training jiu-jitsu, my HRV will start going up. But then if I'm training too hard or I'm just overloaded, and it'll start trending back down, and then I'll have a week of like poor performance where I'm just feeling like gassed out on the mat, and I know I got to take a break. So I use that for most of my clients, because not all clients, like most people, Chase, probably most of your clients too, have sleep issues. And, you know, very few people are like my client yesterday, who's like, I asked him, it's like 8.5 hours was his average, right? I'm like, how do you do that?
And then beyond the outside the scope of like traumatic life events, how do you view stress? And then how do you, what's your take on stress, and how do you feel like your clients and or, you know, people who are listening to this should look at it? Like, so a view that we have is all of our coaches have a background in pro sports. So it's like you think of a lot of our guys have a background in the NFL, where the goal for the player is just to get to Sunday to perform in front of 100,000 people where, you know, if they mess up, it's going to be a huge deal, but that's what they want. Like, so it's not about removing stress from people's lives, but, you know, giving them tools to conquer it. What are your thoughts on stress, and then how do you communicate that to your clients?
Yeah, I think you're bringing up something great. So when we talk about stress, when let's say the narrative about stress is like, oh, stress, and immediately that's a bad word, right? Or it's a negative, got a negative connotation. But lifting weights is stressful. That's what causes your bones to get stronger and your muscles to get stronger and your tendons to get stronger. It's stressful. Doing a HIIT training is pretty stressful, but that's what allows your cardiovascular system to get in better shape. So I ask my clients, first of all, like, hey, I do two things. So I measure their data, right? What's their resting heart rate? What's their HRV? I don't do cortisol rhythm tests unless I really feel something, someone needs it. There's some issues with the way that's done. A lot of the functional docs, they'll run their cortisol and it'll be high. And it's like, yeah, but your cortisol is all over the place all day. So if you're not running a series of tests to get an average, you really don't know if you have high cortisol or not. So I tend not to do that. And I ask people like, hey, what's your stress on a scale 1 to 10? And you bring up something great, Chase. I have a client who, yeah, he's under some stress, but he really loves what he's doing. So it's challenging. It is stressful, but it's not something that is a negative. Like you said, he just needs tools to make sure he can go to sleep on time. And that's the other thing. I look at more like if someone's having a disruption in their sleep, as an example, probably more than the resting heart rate and HRV. It's like, is someone sleeping enough? Because if they are, then, you know, and if they're having some issues beyond that, it's like, well, I have them try different things, because one of the issues that cause burnout, I believe, is not doing enough for recovery. So go get a massage. I have a client. Me personally, I get a massage every week. After that, I can be like anxious or stressed. After the massage, I'm like, just zen. I do meditation, but I have clients who, I had one client who was ticklish. So the massage just wouldn't work. So we tried flotation tanks, and that worked for him. You know, I also got that same client, I wanted to make him more resilient, and I wanted him to try martial arts because I'm biased, right? You know, having done a lot of martial arts, I had him try Muay Thai training, and he stuck with it for a while, but it wasn't for him. He ended up finding his passion, let's say, in pickleball. So he was in a community, he was playing pickleball. Like me, I'm addicted to jiu-jitsu, man. I can't do any other sport. I don't, you know, I'll do it once just to hang out. But, you know, jiu-jitsu people are my people. I go and hang out, we beat each other up and we hug afterward, and, you know, it's all good. So everyone needs to find, I think, some type of relaxation, whether it's meditation. People get too hung up on the method. I think you got to find what works for you, or have someone help you find what works for you. You need some type of relaxation or deep rest strategy or tool. And then you need something that, you know, brings you into the moment. Cause I think working out is boring. I think lifting weights is boring. Now, someone else, that might be their happy place. But for me, lifting in the gym, it's not that boring, but I'd rather be doing other things. I lift weights because I know it's good for my body. I know it's great for maintaining jiu-jitsu performance, but I'm not like, yes, another set of bicep curls. I like the way my body looks too. But, and so I think everybody needs, like, what is that thing that gets you in the zone? So I do jiu-jitsu, I mentioned like 20,000 times already, but I also do scuba diving. That's something I really like. Again, it pulls me out of the moment. The past disappears, the future disappears, and I'm present. I'm in the zone. So that's the way I think about it. Like, are you doing some type of deep rest? And are you doing some type, or getting into a flow state, right? Outside of work, because a lot of my clients get into a flow state in their career or running their business, but outside of work, what are you doing? I got a client who flies planes, as an example, or, you know, does pickleball. So having those two things and personalizing to the person.
Yeah, I love that. Just to make sure that you put time in the schedule to get in that flow state that you're talking about, and then also deep rest. And I will refrain from making any jokes about the gentleman choosing pickleball over martial arts. That's kind of where I want to go next with the flow zone. One of the things I really admire about you is that you, you know, it's very easy to talk about leaving your comfort zone, and you have made the distinct choice to find ways to do that. How often do you feel like people need to, well, we can just talk about maybe the clients that you work with getting out of the comfort zone. Is it like, I mean, I guess jumping out of a plane or something, I'm guessing that would have some longer effects in terms of benefits, in terms of feeling like, you know, feeling alive and things like that. But do you have any specific thoughts in terms of, because that statement can go very vague very quickly in terms of how people can approach it and, you know, get out of their comfort zone more often, which I think is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think it depends on the person. I try to do something. I think I got this idea from Stephen Kotler and Jamie Wheel from, now they're not business partners anymore, but they're into the flow states. And what they said is, Jamie talks about hedonic calendaring. So you do have something that you do weekly, for example, that's jiu-jitsu for me, right? Then have something that you do monthly, right? What do you do monthly? That could be a short trip somewhere. And then what do you do quarterly? Right? Because I think, I'm totally biased again. For me, travel, right? I love to travel. So I try to, I went to Italy for the first time, actually for the first and second time last year. And it was incredible. I saw Rome finally, right? I saw it, you know, in movies like Gladiator, you saw see the Colosseum. I was finally there. I was 46 years old at the time. I'm 47, just turned 47 this month. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, having something that you really look forward to. And so many of my clients, they feel like if they take a break from work, they're going to get behind, they're going to lose their edge. But the reality is that, and I've noticed this, I'm the same way. I'm like, I don't want to take a break. I got content to write. I got coaching to do. I've got so many things that need to get done. But every time when I do it, when I came back from my trip from Italy, I was so invigorated. I was more on top of my diet. I was more on top of my training. I was more on top of everything. So I would say you need to experiment and see like what works for you. But I would say if you're the type of person who tends to put things off, try to do something more frequently. Try to do something weekly, monthly, quarterly. Make sure you do that. And it can't just be, well, I go to, like, I'm in Playa del Carmen near Cancun. It can't just be, well, I go to an all-inclusive resorting and drink and eat, right? It's got to be something else. So, I know that's not a straight answer in terms of, well, you do this once a week and do that. The issue is, depending on the person, they might need a bit more, might need a bit less. I feel like I need more in general, right?
Yeah, I love that idea. Shout out to Jamie Wheel of Hedonic Calendaring. I think that's a great idea. Makes complete sense. And then how often are clients, what's usually the duration of time that they go through your program? Like, what is it, 3 months, 6 months?
Our initial program is 4 months long, but the goal is to get a client to work with us for a year. If you work with me for a year, you're going to be a different person, a better version of yourself after a year. You're going to be an improved version of yourself, and you're going to have... It's not just about the results. It's about the education. Because, Chase, I'm sure you know this with as long as you've been in the business too, you get setbacks. And what's more important is the results are important for sure. But knowing how to get back to a good place when life throws you a curveball, I would argue is more beneficial to clients long term. And if you give me a year, I can teach you how to do that. 4 months, I can give you results. But in a year, I can teach you how to do this on your own and to where, you won't ever have to join a coaching program again. You might want to join a coaching program. I think you should continue. Like, I'll never not work with a coach. I've got several coaches now who I work with. Outside of health and fitness, actually. But I will always have a coach because I feel and perform better when I do versus not. But I have clients who've also worked with me for 2 years. The woman I spoke about, she's been with me for nearly 2 years now.
That's awesome. Well, Taz, as we wrap this up here real quick, I wanted to touch, it sounds like that you accelerated your skills in jiu-jitsu pretty quickly, if I read that right. And sports skill development is something that I'm very intrigued about, and talent development, things like that. Looking back, hindsight 2020, what are some things that you feel like you did that was able to for you to accelerate and maybe learn the art a little bit faster than the millions of other people who are doing it as well?
This is such a great question because there's a revolution going on in jiu-jitsu right now about the way it's taught. Because, I'll share after this interview, I'll share with you maybe someone who you can have on the show. I forget the name of the podcast, but it's like sports skill acquisition. There's a revolution happening in learning. Because the way you do jiu-jitsu, if you've ever been to a jiu-jitsu class, the way it's taught, it's like, okay, well, here's this move. Okay, you get into this position, it's called the mount, and here's how to do an arm bar from the mount. Okay, let's drill that a few times, your partner does it. Okay, now we're gonna go spar. And then you never get to do that move that you did because you don't even know how to get to that position. You don't know how to do the arm, you can do the arm bar, but you can't even get to the position to do the arm bar. But because it takes around 8 to 12 years to get your black belt in jiu-jitsu, so that's why it takes so long. Guys are getting it in 4 years now. And again, they're training frequently, maybe daily. But so now what's happening, it's like, hey, listen, people need to understand concepts. They don't just learn moves and then slap hands and go, wrestle with each other. You need to break things down so that people can learn a skill, because that person who just learned the armbar from the mount position, that's when your opponent's, laying down and then you're over them like that schoolboy position, schoolboy bully position where, anyway. But by the way, I think martial arts, I'm just going to throw this out there. I think martial arts is overrated for actual fighting, but underrated for the mental benefits, right? And also the people that you meet. But to answer your question, I just spent a lot of time doing it. So I would train 3 times a week. I train 3 times in a day. So I put the time in, which I don't recommend doing. I recommend being smarter about it. However, if you do have the time, you know, doing training once a day or a couple times a day, it's going to speed the skill acquisition up. I took private lessons. So instead of going to a group class and then being shown the armbar from the mount, which maybe I already know how to do, and that's like my thing, but I'm really not great at passing the guard or escaping side mount or these other situations in jiu-jitsu, I want to learn the things that I need to work on, right? What do I need to work on? And private lessons gave me that. I ended up winning several competitions at white belt because of that, because I wasn't very good at jiu-jitsu when it first started. And I was strong, and these skinny guys were beating me up. And I was just like, oh gosh, okay. And I was training martial arts at the time. It was like, how can these guys just do this to me and I can't stop it? And I know that I can lift more weight than them. And I'm pretty tough. Like, how is this happening? So anyway, yeah, what's the secret? And doing private lessons, that's helped. Also, I had a grappling dummy at my house where I would drill moves, which is everybody, you know, this is very jiu-jitsu specific, but I think it applies to other sports as well. You don't want to run drills. You just want to go play football. You want to go play soccer. But the truth is, if you break down a soccer match or a football match, it's made up of these different components. For example, in football, there's catching the ball when the quarterback throws it. So instead of playing a game where sometimes you get thrown the ball, but most of the time you don't get thrown the ball, or, you know, I'm not really, don't know that much about American football, but you know, just so bear with me if you're a huge fan and you're like, that's kind of not how it works. But instead of doing that, drill the catching so you put the reps where you need to. And okay, now I catch the ball. I can catch the ball running left. I can catch the ball running right. I can catch the ball when one person's, you know, covering me or two people covering me. So by breaking down games, breaking down a sport and realizing the different components and practicing those components, right? Because there's one big game happening, but there's all these mini games happening too. And so by practicing those and getting good at all those little games, it's going to up your entire skill set. So so that's what I tried to eventually do. And I got my blue belt in 1 year of training, got my purple belt in another year of training, got my brown belt, I think, either in a year or year and a half of training. But I've been stuck at brown belt level because of the injuries. So that's another story, of course. But that's what I would say. You have to understand the game. You have to understand the components, and you got to practice the specific components. You don't just go out and play and hope you're better.
Yeah. So extraordinary amount of reps, getting one-on-one time with coaches, and then breaking the down into components. You're training your nervous system. I'm training at MMA at GoChet in Miami. And I had a conversation with the striking coach there today. And that's what he said, like, the concept really was for, like, practicing combinations and things like that. He's like, okay, that is one aspect, and you want to do that because you want to train your nervous system. And then the game gets different when you have someone across from you competing again, and that's where the IQ mm-hmm. comes in, you know, in terms of how to deal with he's big. One of the things that just really, really resonated with me when you were talking about, like, high-level concepts, he's big with, like, the eyes just – don't think about the combination. Like, what are your eyes seeing from the guy across from you? So I love that. To wrap this up, Ted, real quick, I'd like to do some rapid fire with you. Biggest mentor or teacher that you've had in your life?
Biggest mentor or teacher that I've had in my life would have to be my dad.
Mm. And best book or research paper that you've read in the past year?
Best book I've read in the past year would be Buy Your Time Back by Dan Martell.
Hmm. And then biggest habit that has added the most to your life that you've either added or taken away in the past year?
Going to bed as early as possible. So around 9:30, 10 at the latest. I feel like a superhuman when I, all else being equal, I feel superhuman when I do that.
Yeah. I think this personal experience, same way here. And I think the science backs it up, but the more sleep that you get before midnight, I think that's where a disproportionate amount of deep sleep gets. So yeah, if I go to bed really early, even if I don't get the best night of sleep, I still feel pretty good the next day. Awesome. Well, Ted Rice, thank you so much for coming on Super Athlete Radio. Killed it like we knew you would. Best place for people to connect with you?
Best place is to go to legendarylightpodcast.com. That's where you'll find not only my podcast and articles, but you'll find our free masterclass. So if you're interested in my approach, whether you want to become a client or not, go to legendarylifepodcast.com and watch that free masterclass. And that will give you an idea of what the foundation is to get to that next level with your physique and with your health. The other place that I'm super active is on Twitter or X now. So you can find me there at Ted_RYCE.
Awesome. Ted, thank you so much for coming on Super Athlete Radio. I look forward to meeting you in person, and thank you again.
Yeah, thank you, Chase. Appreciate the opportunity.